This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's movies we're going to be talking about include XXX, The Return of Xander Cage, Split, The Founder, The Resurrection of Gavin Stone, The Red Turtle, and Trespass Against Us. I'll also be talking about the news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news is a very sad goodbye to Miguel Ferrer. He was only 61. He died of cancer this week. And most people, well, I think probably now most people recognize him from, what was he on, NCIS Los Angeles? I never watched the NCIS shows, and there's like 15 of them, so I don't keep those straight. But he was on NCIS. But to somebody like me who grew up in the 80s and loves science fiction and genre pictures, he's best known to me as the pseudo bad guy from RoboCop. He was one of the bad guys in RoboCop. Kurtwood Smith was the main bad guy. But Miguel Ferrer played sort of this sleazy, hotshot business guy who's ready to step onto whatever toes he could. And I always thought he was deliciously dastardly in these movies. He always played a great bad guy, and he was always a real good heavy. But he also did some other stuff that, you know, I recognize that to sort of fall in my wheelhouse of movies like Iron Man 3. Most recently, he played, I think it was the vice president who was a dirty dealer. And there was also him in a couple Stephen King adaptations back in the 90s. You had him in The Stand, the TV movie, which he was one of the best parts of that movie. And then there was also The Night Flyer, which isn't a great movie, but it's an interesting movie about a vampire that flies around in a plane going from airport to airport. And again, he was the best part. He's what made that movie. That he raised the quality of what would have been just a B-level, almost direct-to-video thriller to something that was at least enjoyable on a certain degree. And it's sad to see Miguel Ferrer. He was young. You know, that's what cancer does. That just sucks. So, yeah. You're going to be missed, Miguel Ferrer. The next piece of news, the movie A Dog's Purpose, which opens next week. Apparently, there has been this video that's leaked from the set. I remember back in the 80s when the movie Project X came out, which was about chimpanzees used in military testing. And it became a big deal because there was a video, a surveillance video, that showed them beating the chimpanzees to get them to comply and to train them. Now, in the video, it shows time on set where they're in this water tank and there's rushing water coming in. And it's all like blue screened out and everything because they're going to digitally mask it into the film. And there's this German shepherd that doesn't want to go in the water. And it's just from the side, then they're talking, oh, he doesn't want to go in the water. The water's not cold. The water's warm. And it appears that the dog's just, he doesn't want to go, either he doesn't want to go the distance down, because it's actually a bit of a fall down into the water. But it's also the rushing of the water, which tends to be loud, which might kind of freak the dog out. And then it cuts in the middle and it shows the dog swimming and goes under, and they all cut and they go after the dog. And they don't show the dog getting saved, but the dog got saved. And now this has caused a big deal. And PETA's talking about boycotting it. Now, apparently they had an American Humane Society representative on set. And the American Humane Society has said, okay, now we're going to look into this. They've put the person on leave. This is tough because there's a lot of people going, oh, no, dogs should go through that. Oh, my God, you abused the dog. First of all, there's a cut in the video, and it appears to be two totally different videos. One looks like it's taking place on set, and the other one looks like it's lit completely differently, clearly cut in the middle to make it appear like the dog was just thrown in the water and dumped. They're two different scenes. And it appears that the dog got acclimated to the water, then was in the water, and then later on it went under. But they never show them. They show them immediately cutting when the dog goes under, and then that divers went in and saved the dog, and the dog was fine. Here's my issue. It's not like they were beating the dog. And yeah, the dog was reluctant to go in, but they weren't just throwing him in the water. And you know, could this have been handled better? Probably. Could the dog have been trained better? Yeah. Could they have tried it with a lower platform? Could they have tried it with the water not so rushing? I don't know. You don't know what happens before it. You don't know what happens after it. Was it an appropriate handling of the dog? Probably not. Was it abuse? Was it the level of Project X where they're beating apes in the face with billy clubs? No. I've seen animal rights and animal abuse videos, and they're disturbing. I wouldn't characterize this as disturbing. I would just characterize this as more uncomfortable. I would need to know a lot more about this. I think it's interesting. Whenever you get a tape and it's a minute long, this is clearly behind the scenes video they were shooting. There's a lot more of it there. And the fact that it got edited makes me suspicious. There's a clear cut in the video. I don't believe any video that comes out that's a minute long that includes an edit. Clearly there's 25 or 30 or an hour more footage surrounding this. So it looks like it was edited together for the biggest emotional impact. And I don't know. I mean, the dog's clearly stressed out, but with that said, you still got to be good to animals on set. And I'd be curious to see what the final Humane Society investigation reveals. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First movie I want to talk about actually opens a little later. It's on March 24th, and that is Chips. I remember this TV show well, and here's the movie they're making.
California Highway Patrol. Think they have some crooked cops. They want you to go on the inside.
Go undercover within a department? That's awesome.
We put you with a rookie named John Baker.
So who am I playing?
Francis Llewellyn Poncherello.
Are the first two female names?
What's up? I'm John.
Poncherello.
Awesome, man. We're partners.
What's your job?
Find the dirty cops.
Check it.
We don't know who in this department is in on this.
First of all, this is an R-rated movie, and if you watch the full trailer, there's so many Dax Shepard's package jokes. I mean, it's almost homophobic, ridiculously homophobic, that there's like three scenes in the trailer where they're talking about his package and how Michael Peña's character doesn't want to touch it, how Ponch doesn't want to touch it. It's a lot for a single trailer, I think. But also, this doesn't look at all like Chips. Chips was always somewhat what they were going after. They were going after petty criminals, minor things, but it's more about Ponch and John and their daily life. And it was a fun little show. I remember watching Chips in the 80s. This looks like they want to try and make 21 Jump Street. They're making him an undercover officer. I mean, at this point, are you going to really get much traction with Chips as a name? I mean, Chips has been off the air for, what, 30-some years? And Ponch and John, maybe some people remember, but I mean, nobody under 30 remembers who Ponch and John were. I don't know. This just looks like a misfire. And it has Dax Shepard in it, which is a terrible thing. The next one I want to talk about is XX, which opens on February 17th.
Your son tore my daughter's fingernails off.
You're not going to punish him?
Something's happening to Andy. Something just terrible.
If you don't eat, eventually you'll die.
So?
The most notable thing about this movie is it is an anthology horror film directed by four female directors. And like Roxanne Benjamin, who did Southbound, there's a couple smaller directors who haven't done much, but there's also Karen Kusama, who did Jennifer's Body and Eon Flux and In the Invitation most recently. I'm not a big fan of her work. The only thing that bothers me, I just want to see a good horror movie. I don't care whether women directed it. I think women are completely capable of directing a horror movie. Don't get me wrong. I've seen great movies directed by women. I don't care. I just want to see a good horror movie. And it always bothers me when the selling point is something that has nothing to do with the final product of the film. Okay, great. It's directed by women. Is it good? I don't know. I've seen plenty of crappy movies directed by guys. So, you know, the fact that that's sort of like the angle they're going bothers me. But I do like these Portmandu ones. And the trailer looks kind of cool and creepy. So I'm looking forward to it. And some of these people were involved in the VHS franchise, and I like those. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. I just hope that the biggest selling point isn't that it's directed by women and that it's actually a good movie. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Founder and the resurrection of Gavin Stone.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Founder. You deserve a break today. Michael Keaton plays Ray Kroc in this biopic about the development of the McDonald's franchise.
We wanted something different.
And that's when my brother here comes up with one of his brilliant ideas.
Orders ready in 30 seconds, not 30 minutes.
Unique? There's nothing like this.
It's revolutionary.
It's exactly what it is. It's revolutionary.
What is that?
The golden arches.
It's a way to make the place stand out.
There should be McDonald's everywhere. Franchise the damn thing.
Mr. Kroc.
Franchise, franchise, franchise.
McDonald's can be the new American church. And it ain't just open on Sundays, boys.
I'm sort of surprised that this didn't get more traction during award season. I mean, I am, but I'm not. Part of it is it's a Weinstein film. And you know, remember like 5-6 years ago? The Weinsteins just were the ones who, they just declared who the winner of the Oscars would be. They declared, hey, it's going to be The King's Speech. It's going to be The Artist. There were that was their movies. And they just declared that those were going to win. I mean, The Artist, that's a great example of a movie that... Again, there's a reason La La Land's going to win this year. It's going to win the Oscar. And the reason La La Land's going to win the Oscar is because Hollywood loves movies about itself. I had a friend say, well, you know, L.A. Confidential didn't win. I go, well, two things. First of all, it didn't make L.A. look good. Second of all, it was going up against Titanic. But, you know, The Artist is a great example of Hollywood loving itself so much that it's going to give itself the Oscar. And that's why La La Land's going to win. La La Land's a perfectly fine movie. It's just not the greatest of the year. It's going to be one of those movies that, you know, people are going to look back on and be like, wow, that won? Oh, of course it won. It's about Hollywood. You could probably say that, you know, I mean, Spotlight won last year, and I loved Spotlight. It was one of my favorite movies of the year. It's such a well-made movie. It's just not this box office juggernaut that people will remember forever. I mean, 10 years from now, people will be, oh, yeah, I remember Spotlight. That was a good movie. I forgot that won the Oscar. But The Founder is from the Weinsteins. I would have expected them to push it. Michael Keaton has been trying to win an Oscar for years. He almost won for Birdman. Spotlight was another. Now he's got The Founder, and he does a great job in this movie. He's able to make Ray Kroc into a likable character and a despicable character at the same time. And in this sense, The Founder's the kind of movie that makes you want to run out and eat McDonald's. Because it's, in a way, kind of a giant advertisement for it. Because it's all about McDonald's, and they're talking about the food, and they're showing the food being cooked, and you see it fresh, and they're talking about how innovative it was and how much people liked it, especially back in the 50s when there were really no other options. I mean, technically, I guess White Castle was the first restaurant to actually start doing the assembly line cooking. But that kind of pioneered that fast food model, but it was perfected by the McDonald's brothers. And then Ray Kroc came in and was able to get them to franchise it out. So while a lot of people say, oh, Ray Kroc's the founder of McDonald's, even the title of the movie, is he the founder? I think he's the founder of the McDonald's Corporation. He's not the founder of the restaurant. And this movie plays around with that. And that's kind of cool because it shows you what a gray zone Ray Kroc existed in. Because on one hand, he was an American dreamer. I mean, he pioneered a brilliant product and moved it around the country internationally. I mean, I don't know if anyone other than Ray Kroc could have made McDonald's what it is today. But he was also kind of a jerk, if you really look at the history of it and some of the things. And they don't shy away from it in this movie. There's things that happen in this movie that you're like, ooh, that was not a nice thing to do. That was probably not even ethical. And it certainly wasn't nice. And it was possibly borderline illegal. It's just they throw up the idea that just because somebody does something illegal in business does not mean that they're going to get caught, because if they have enough money behind them, they can just fill it up the courts and you never be able to win. That's one of the big problems in business, is that somebody can do something wrong in business. It's a complete 100% wrong and illegal. But if you don't have the money to fight them at their level, then you may never get restitution. You may never even get a verdict. Michael Keaton does a great job, and it shows the background of McDonald's that a lot of people don't know. But like I said, you want to go out and eat McDonald's because it makes you think about McDonald's, but you also want to never eat McDonald's again, because you realize what an a-hole Ray Kroc could be about this. And I like that, because that shows how good Keaton is in the movie, because you like him. You feel for this guy, even when he's doing things that are not very good. And it's sort of up to say that the power is what's corrupting him, and the power is what's pushing him to do bad things. And it's if that he was just still selling milkshake makers out of his car, he'd probably be a nicer person. And that's possibly true. There's a lot of people that are ruined by fame and success and money. And even if they, on the outward appearance, are still nice people, everyone's got skeletons in their closet. But still, I think The Founder's a neat movie. It wasn't going to make the best picture, but I'm just surprised there at least wasn't more traction for Keaton as best actor. But still, I like The Founder. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the resurrection of Gavin Stone. A hot mess of a former child star does community service at a church and pretends to be Christian to play the role of Jesus in their passion play.
Infamous star Gavin Stone became a fixture on the party scene.
Dad, you in trouble?
A little.
What kind?
The kind where you can't leave the state until you've completed your community service hours.
I've never acted before, but I'm willing to serve the Lord in whatever way you see fit.
You know, as gifted as I am with a mop, I'm 10 times better on stage. We ask that all cast members be Christians.
Is that it?
No.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gavin Stone. I'm auditioning for the role of Jesus Christ.
Superstar.
Since it's church-based entertainment, I have a confession. I didn't see this movie. And look, I'm not advocating movies for religious purposes or not for religious purposes. I've just said, and you've heard me say this before, when it comes to faith-based movies, they tend to be of a lower quality than regular movies. And part of the reason for that is the purpose of making the movie is not to make the most entertaining, well-constructed film. The purpose is to have a religious message. And that can get in the way of making a good movie sometimes. That can get in the way of dramatic license. That can get in the way of actually showing character development, because you come in with a sort of very preconceived worldview. And I remember when the movie, I think it was Miracles from Heaven, came out, which I thought was okay. But they had, clearly, were using people in the congregation of wherever they were filming, or people from the church, were had extra parts in their background, and they're terrible. Not churchgoers, it's just average people as extras generally are terrible. There's a reason why Hollywood has professional extras, because they know how to act in front of a camera when you're not supposed to draw attention to themselves. They used members of this congregation to fill out the roles, and I've just watched the trailer, and the trailer looks so sappy. I'm sure it's fine for sort of like Sunday afternoon viewing with your mom. I'm sure it's fine. It just looks so cheesy. It also is very condescending, I think, in a way, at least just in the trailer, where they're like, well, as Christians, we believe that. But really, seriously, you live in America. Do you not understand how Christianity works? Do you not understand how church works? Have you not run into people who go to church, or have you not been to church? It really puts people on this real self-righteous pedestal, even just in the trailer. I don't know. This movie just looks terrible. But they didn't show it to me, so I can give it a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about XXX, The Return of Xander Cage, and Trespass Against Us.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare.
In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue with the movie reviews. We've got Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage. Vin Diesel comes back from the dead as Xander Cage, the extreme sports Gen X super spy, ready to save the world and look dope doing it.
If you wanted me back, you could have just asked me.
A device that controls every military satellite in the world has fallen into the hands of four very dangerous guys.
We need someone who can move like them, fight like them. It's time to be a patriot.
There are no more patriots, just rebels and tyrants.
So which are you?
I'm Triple X.
This was not screened. I had to go pay money to go see this. And that's a real shame because I'll never get that $11 back. I'll never get the $11 back that I spent on better movies. This one just was not a good movie. I'm not going to kid you. I'm not going to mince words at the beginning. This movie is colossally bad. This movie is alarmingly bad. This movie... I can't say that it doesn't fit in with the first two movies because it certainly feels like it was made in the early 2000s. Part of what happened, you had the first Triple X, which was sort of this cool little hit. It was when Vin Diesel was getting his first explosion into stardom. And Triple X did really, really well. And then they did a sequel with Ice Cube because Vin Diesel didn't return. And that thing bombed. And it's funny, if you go to Wikipedia, it's like the Triple X franchise. It's a global... made $350 million globally. Well, really, like $240 million of that or $260 million of that was the first movie and the rest was the second movie and nothing yet from this third one. It's so obvious that Paramount is trying to recreate the Fast and Furious franchise with Triple X. They put together this team for him, which is kind of, if I recall, and it's been years since I've seen the original Triple X. I didn't want to go back and revisit it. But I remember it being a fine, disposable, Gen X, James Bond kind of thing. But this one, they're trying to stock the cast with these other action stars, very similar to what they did in the Fast and Furious movie, where it's not just Vin Diesel and Paul Walker, who were in the first one. As they got to other movies and farther along, they started putting in Tyrese Gibson, and they brought in all the other people who I can't remember their names for. I mean, they just fleshed out this massive team that worked together. And that works in the context of Fast and Furious movies. And I think they're hoping that this one, you're going to get what you had with Fast and Furious, which was the fourth one, where they're bringing a new model with original parts kind of thing, which is what they did with Paul Walker and Vin Diesel. This one, they're seriously trying to bring back Vin Diesel as this guy. And Vin Diesel's fine in it. I mean, I don't have anything against Vin Diesel. I like Vin Diesel. He's incredibly compelling. And it's very clear that he loves making these movies and he embraces his fan base. But I think that this is going to click more the way The Last Witch Hunter did than the Fast and Furious franchise. Because really, the Fast and Furious franchise is the only other thing that he's got that's really super powerful at the box office. I mean, the Riddick movies do okay for the little money they spend on them. But this one is just... it's nonsensical. I remember listening to the commentary to Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, which, by the way, if you ever like commentaries, listen to the writer's commentary on Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, because the writers are some of the best writers in Hollywood, and they did a crappy movie. But when you listen to what they have to say about the challenges they faced, you realize, oh yeah, they are such brilliant writers because they were able to make this mess of a behind-the-scenes project actually into a not good but coherent film. And so there's one scene in there where they're doing this dirt bike race in the Charlie's Angels movies. And the commentary, one of the guys goes, yeah, well, you know, here they wanted them to sort of like seem to defy gravity, but they just kind of mock gravity. This thing's happened in this dirt bike scene that's ridiculous. And that's kind of the way it is with this movie. They're not just defying physics. They're mocking physics. They're doing things. And I'm not like trying to be a super uber nerd of saying, well, you can't do that because that just doesn't work scientifically. I mean, like, opening sequence. They're stealing this Pandora's box. For whatever reason, somebody has a thing that controls every single satellite, the however many thousands of satellites are. Every single satellite controlled by this one box. They got it in the CIA building. Donnie Yen goes running off a building, leaps, and probably falls about four or five floors, lands on glass that they later in the movie point out is 3 inches thick. 3 inches thick is like the size of somebody's fist, that much glass. And he lands it, it shatters, and he lands in the boardroom and he does all this martial arts stuff. Now, I don't doubt that it's possible for Donnie Yen to leap off all four or five stories and shatter a window in the process that's 3 inches thick. He would probably shatter some other things like his knees, all of his bones in his legs, and probably his spleen in the process. It's ridiculous at that point. And it's not like he's like got superpowers. That's just him. He's so good at martial arts, he can shatter a window by falling on it. And like there's a scene where Tony Yah, who's another martial arts guy, somebody starts shooting like machine guns at him and he's doing backflips. In a backflip, your torso's in the same spot. So you're not dodging bullets. There's another scene where they get on motorcycles and then the motorcycles have skis, like water skis on them, and they go onto the ocean. Apparently it also propels. I don't know how, but it does. And at one point, Vin Diesel goes under a wave with his. And underwater, he revs the engine and you hear the engine go boom, and then he comes leaping out. That's not how internal combustion engines work. You need oxygen. If you rev the engine underwater, you will kill the motor. And I mean, it's this kind of stuff that's just ludicrous and insane and dumb. And it is so loud. It's sort of like trying to explain the plot of something to somebody and then having a toddler run around and bang pots and pans together every 20 seconds. You've got Toni Collette, who is so above this movie. And she, you could just see her saying the lines and just going, just give me my paycheck. Just give me my paycheck. I need a new vacation home. Please just pay me. This movie's terrible. It tries to be Fast and Furious and it fails miserably. Even for like just a big dumb action movie, it doesn't work. So I'm going to have to say Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, Triple sucks.
It sucks. Sucks. Sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about Trespass Against Us. Michael Fassbender plays an uneducated criminal who lives in a caravan with his family, unable to break these bonds and lead a normal life with his wife and children.
Mia, I've never been arrested.
Not yet, Chad. All three times.
I've never been charged.
Thing is, Chad, we can't be having your old man and his old luck pitching up. We're a shell community. No troubles, and I want to keep it that way.
It's all I want, too.
Got a job for you tonight, all right?
Can't live like this no more. Can't do it. I've had enough.
It's all right, Cal. We're all getting over here now.
This is a smaller production from England. It's essentially a drama, and it's a family drama, and you have a lot of tension between Michael Fassbender, and he's playing against Brendan Gleeson, who's one of my favorite actors. And they're both really good. They're both fantastic actors. It's not him overtly trying to break away, but it's him just trying to kind of just live a normal life there. But his dad's just a bad influence on him. And the rest of his family's a bad influence. They're sort of like these gypsies in this caravan camp where it's not really a trailer park because they're on wheels. I mean, it's something that they could get up and move. It's almost, like I said, it's almost like a gypsy camp. Michael Fassbender's character is uneducated. When he was a kid, he never went to school. And so he struggles with that. He struggles with wanting to give his kids a better life. And when things happen that are essential white trash stuff in this caravan camp, he doesn't like it. And his wife wants him to move on. But he gets sucked back into doing these criminal activities because, well, his dad's got an influence on him. And there's a lot of reality there. And if you like that sort of intense family drama and you can chew through some of these British accents because they're pretty thick at times and kind of hard to understand. I understand some people, boy, when you get a movie talking fast, it's really hard to understand. If you remember that scene from Snatch where Brad Pitt played, he was like an Irish gypsy and his Irish accent, which I guess was very authentic, but I mean, it just was very hard to understand at times. For your average American. Now, it opens in my hometown, Columbus, Ohio, this week, and it's sort of being rolled out. It's going to be opening in the UK, I think, next month. But if you want to check out Michael Fassbender doing a more dramatic piece and not something so weepy and hand clingy as The Light Between the Oceans, you can check out Trespass Against Us. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Red Turtle, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Max Steele. Hit the sky for- There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is The Red Turtle, the final film as well. This is an animated movie. A man is shipwrecked on a small island and has a magical encounter with a large red sea turtle who transforms into a woman to give him companionship and a son. This is being released by Studio Ghibli, and they, of course, are best known for the Hayao Miyazaki movies like My Neighbor Totoro, Spirited Away, The Wind Rises, Ponyo, these brilliant Japanese animated films. And this one's a little bit different. It's not done by Miyazaki, and it's a different group. And since Miyazaki has really pulled back from his films, the Ghibli has done a lot of these movies that are different. They did movies like the Legend of Princess Kaguya, which wasn't in their immediate Hayao Miyazaki tradition necessarily. They do a lot of these films, and they're a great animation house. Now, one of the neatest things about this movie, and you can kind of tell by the trailer, because a lot of it was just sound, there's no dialogue. Like, he yells no, or help at one point. But it's basically a film with no actual dialogue or language, because what do you need language for? You're stuck alone on a desert island. It overcomes that language barrier with the challenge of just not using dialogue, and that's kind of brilliant. Because if animation's anything, animation can show you things that you don't need words to describe. Now, obviously we're on the radio, so I gotta use words to describe this. But it's in a lot of ways very minimalistly animated. You know, some of these animated films have so much stuff going on, and like in a like lower level American animated films, it's even big ones, but like sort of lowbrow animation stuff, like the Angry Birds movie last year, or even Storks. They just throw a lot of stuff at you, and it's colors, bam, 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 and it's almost sensory overload. This is very slow. This is very steadily, deliberately paced. Like I said, minimalist animation, but very beautiful animation, almost a watercolor palette. Just because it's a cartoon does not mean you want to go take like a 3-year-old to go see it. But I think a kid who's in 8 or 9 or 10 can appreciate this movie for certain. And even though it's not Irish, it has sort of this background, almost like it's like a Selkie legend with this turtle that turns into a woman. And not in a weird way. I mean, it's magical, like a Selkie. If you ever saw Song of the Sea, which was an animated film a couple years ago, which was a gorgeously animated film by the people who did The Secret of the Kells. And that one was about a Selkie. Or if you ever saw The Secret of Ronan Ish, which is an Irish movie from about 20, 25 years ago, again, about a Selkie. A Selkie is an Irish folklore about a seal that turns into a woman. And this feels a lot like that, only it's a totally different culture. It's gorgeously animated, beautiful, very touching. And it's a great palate cleanser for the wham, bam, slam, everything at you kind of attitude that you get with some American cinema. So I'm going to have to say that The Red Turtle totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. And was I correct? I said Patriots Day and Hidden Figures were going to duke it out for number one at the box office. That match ended up being won by Hidden Figures, and handily so. I mean, Hidden Figures did not just squeak by. Hidden Figures in the 3 day made $21 million. And the next closest was La La Land with under 15. Patriots Day underperformed with just under $12 million for the 3 day. And Live by Night didn't even make it in the top 10 with just over $5 million. Now, if you look at the 4 day weekend, Hidden Figures still was number one, had almost $28 million. Sing came in second for the 4 day, and that's because you had kids going a lot. That was at $19 million, and La La Land picked up a little extra. Again, Patriots Day came in seventh with just $14 million for that 4 day weekend, and Live by Night was still out of the top 10 with $6 million. I was kind of surprised Patriot Day didn't do well. Maybe people are just getting tired of Peter Berg as a director. Maybe this is the third one he's done, and it's been diminishing returns since Lone Survivor. You know, maybe he's going to do Battleship 2 next. Who knows? I don't know. But Hidden Figures is sort of the little movie that could. And that's great. It's a charming story, a great little story about something in history that not a whole lot of people knew about. And good for that. Now, this week, Hidden Figures probably not going to be at the top. Maybe it could. But the sort of conventional wisdom is it's going to be a horse race between XXX and Split. It looks like they're going to be fighting for number one, right around $20 million. And certainly, XXX is going to do well overseas because it's partly funded by a Chinese corporation, and these international locations tend to do well overseas, throwing like Donnie Yen into it. So it's going to do well. I mean, XXX, even if it doesn't do well in America, it's going to do well overseas thanks to the Chinese market. But, you know, these both could bomb, and Hidden Figures could walk away with like $15 million at the top. I mean, the margins are relatively thin. So I think it would be a hoot if Hidden Figures took the weekend again, which would be its third in a row because it stole it from Rogue One 2 weeks ago. Just barely squeaked by. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. Today's spotlight for the Home Cinema Roundup is Max Steel. Came out last week on DVD and Blu-ray. It's been out on demand for a while. It came out back in October. Here's one that I missed in the theaters because it just wasn't screened, and it's by Open Road, so they're a little bit iffy in terms of getting their stuff screened. They used to screen pretty widely when they first hit the market, and then some of their movies didn't do very well, and it's very rare to get an Open Road screening, at least where I am from. A teenager discovers he has special powers thanks to energy experiments from his dead father and an alien robot that helps him harness them.
You knew my dad. I need to know about his work.
Your father was working to find a way to harness energy beyond anything that mankind has ever attempted. He was right on the edge of a breakthrough.
What's happening to me?
Max? My name is Steel.
Did you do this to me?
No, Max. Your father gave you these powers. I'm just here to show you how to use them. Let's get started.
After seeing this movie, I can totally see why it did not do well. It's certainly enjoyable for kids. I mean, my son, who's 8.5, he watched it with me. And he really liked it. I had to kind of coax him into watching it because he wasn't all that interested. And I think that's part of the thing is the poster and the marketing was very dark and it didn't look compelling to younger kids. It's also rated PG-13, mainly for the violence and some subject matter. Now, the PG-13 doesn't matter when it's like a Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie. The PG-13 matters when it's a movie you've never heard of. They want PG for that. PG is considered very safe. PG-13 might have boobs in it. PG-13 might have some swearing in it. PG-13 might have some violence in it that the parents don't want the kids to see. So having a PG-13 rating, I think, hurt this considerably. It also is not that great of a movie. It feels like, you know, if you watch a Michael Bay movie, you know how his character moments seem like you're drunk while you're watching it. It's just sort of murky. There's just like a lot of random dialogues. The camera's moving. It's got all these filters on it. And obviously, Michael Bay's strength is the action. When he finally has the character moments, he still tries to gloss it up with all these cinematic techniques. And it just looks kind of hard to follow when two people are just sitting there talking, which those should be the easiest things to shoot. That's the way this movie felt. And I felt like I was sleepy through half this movie because it just kind of, you know, swerved from scene to scene, and it just kind of just didn't really work for me. and the action's kind of cool. But the other problem is they got this cute robot, this Steel, and it's part of a toy. It's from Mattel. But the problem with Steel is he's out of place. You know, it feels like it's trying to be a more grown-up superhero movie, and then you throw in a cute robot. And the cute robot's voiced by the guy from Silicon Valley. But he sounds basically like Disembodio from Riff Trax. It's just not, it's jarring. It doesn't fit together. You have this trying to be more of a grown-up Marvel movie, and then you've got a weird cute robot, a strange cute robot that you'd expect them to squeeze into a movie in the 80s, but that was 30 years ago. Why are you doing it today? In the end, Max Steel has the explosions and the goofy science that makes no sense. It's not a great movie, but you know, for a Saturday afternoon watch, I guess it's okay, but I'm still going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
The rest of the films that are out on DVD and Blu-ray this week that you can check out, you've got The Girl on the Train with Emily Blunt, Keeping Up with the Joneses, and then Ouija Origin of Evil, which was a sequel, and then Death Race 2050, which is Roger Corman's spinning off of Death Race 2000, which is now 17 years too old to actually be relevant. And then finally, NYPD Blues, the final season, has finally been released on DVD if you've been hoping for that. And that's kind of a death knell to the home physical media. And that's kind of sad because they're no longer finishing up some of these seasons. I'm just squeaking them out. And that's it. I need to go for the week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Gold, A Dog's Purpose, and Resident Evil, the final chapter. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.